welcome back.
Summer, dude.
Watching you adjust the hat over there, that new Toxic Doom hat you got on.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like back in that, what was that movie? Was it Scary Movie or Don't Be a Menace, where they're like, do I wear the Tech Nine or with the Adidas?
If you saw what we did before we started taping, or if you follow the Instagram page, you'll probably see it on Instagram. We did some unboxing of a bunch of stuff that we got from people that we follow on Instagram. Toxic Doom is one of them. I'm wearing the hat. Again, check out the Instagram page at Mutant City Horror if you want to see it, because you're probably just halfway listening to this in your car. But I will say, with all the shit
I do in my shower,
where else are you gonna listen?
That's right. I mean, who else takes 2-hour showers?
Every female I know. And some guys, to be fair, some guys. But no, with all the merch sitting around, like even like the shirt I'm wearing is a gift from the kids. It was my Father's Day gift. But like, it still feels like with the hat on, like that scene from Wayne's World 2, where Wayne and Garth are talking about product placement in movies, and like every little thing was like product placement. I feel like I am
Pepsi, the taste of a new generation.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like Wayne and Garth in that moment right now.
That's good. That's good stuff, though. That's good stuff. I mean, if you're gonna feel like something, feel like Wayne and Garth. Like you can't really go wrong.
100%. So what's up, man?
Not much, man. I've been like in Olympic fever ever since the kicked off, like a couple days before the opening ceremony, watching rugby and soccer and watching the USA just dominate in the women's soccer. Of course, not the men's, unfortunately.
Well, they floundered too much. They spent too much time on the floor.
There's a lot going on there.
I getcha. Rugby has always been something that I've always wanted to get into. Like, and I've tried a little bit and trying to like look up a schedule and a calendar and like seasons, and it was a little foreign to me. So I never really like made much of an effort to like go out and seek it and kind of get into it. I did that with Formula One, and I've been watching that for a few seasons, and that one was easier to pick up. But rugby was always one of those ones. And then when I started watching, when I was like, oh shit, they're on the Olympics, like let me watch that. But we started with the girls rugby, and that shit was tough, dude. Those girls are badass.
Yeah, they are. That I think they took gold.
No, I didn't. And
I mean, like, it was a breakaway run that looked boss. Like any NFL star would be envious of the catch and the run.
Nice, dude. Yeah, I think the I think the game we saw was the first one with Australia versus the UK, and I think the UK just like, well, one of them just like blew it open, man. It was crazy.
It's cool to see people at the top of their sport, and not to mention like get exposure to some of these sports that aren't necessarily the same mainstream like they are here in the US, right? Like you got the top four here. Outside of that,
right,
we don't give as much love except for on like the Ocho or something late at night.
Yeah, I got this little box that picks up movies and television shows from here and there. Mm-hmm. And it's notorious for always having things like slap boxing and like the pillow fight tournaments and the phone booth MMA shit. And I was telling the guy I get the box from, I was like, you know, it'd be dope if you curated like a watch list, like if there was a channel or something that you could show me where I could watch all these sports events, because those are the ones I want to watch the most, like the foot table tennis and like
right
Filipino basketball. They're implementing the 4-point line, dude. Like I want to see that crazy shit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, don't sleep on that Filipino basketball. That's what I'm saying, man. The fastest 4-foot runners I've ever seen.
That's what I'm saying, dude. That's where it's at. The wide world of the Ocho sports.
That's right. Well, I mean, like, look at all these celebrities buying up like stadiums and teams and getting involved. Like, there's a lot of money in that. And I mean, right now, I think the women's Major League Soccer, MLS, is the next to start picking up.
All right. Well, sports ain't what we're here to do.
No, sir.
What are we doing?
Murder.
As Matt would say, murder. Oh, man. Fucking Matt. He's off breeding chocobos right now, so he's not going to join us today.
Final Fantasy style.
Yeah, you got it. 2 points to Mr. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, we got murder in the form of party. I mean, what type of party you want to show up to other than murder party?
I like to party.
That's right.
All right. Well, let me give us our typical Matt intro. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Tonight, the monsters are running amok, and we head towards that theater where the marquee now reads Murder Party.
Welcome to your murder.
This is the party. We've been planning this for weeks.
The invitation said murder party. If some jackass is dumb enough to come here, then he deserves to die.
Look, I don't think we actually thought someone would be stupid enough to show up.
It's a white male, he's perfect.
Think beyond splattering blood on canvas. When our masterpiece is complete, and the coroner's report is back in, it will read the cause of death. Art.
Happy Halloween.
Everybody dies.
I didn't sign up for a second degree assault party.
A 2007 Jeremy Saulnier movie.
I think it's like Saulnier, or it's got like that French kind of thing going to it.
Damn, hold up. That's a French ass name.
Yvonne.
Hell yeah. Can I get your number?
Yeah. My little croissant.
Fucking Mad TV. I love that shit.
I don't think it's French, but. What do I know? I'm going to go nothing. With Saulnier. Saulnier.
Nailed it. All right.
I got it right. There you go. Nailed it.
He wrote, directed, and shot this movie. But summary of it. So it's a bunch of art students try to commit murder and invite someone unknowingly to this murder party to be murdered.
That's fair. Yeah. Now, I will be honest. Matt has conditioned me to not like look at movies as far as like trailers or like read anything before. Let's like jump in, you know?
Right.
And it took him a long time to get me to that point, but he broke me. And so, you know, I didn't do that with this one. And just based off the name, I was thinking it was going to be something a little bit different. I mean, it was still kind of on brand with what I thought it was going to be, but it was still completely different, which was a nice surprise. And then also too, the movie's short. It's like an hour 20, I think, at the most.
Yeah.
So it's digestible, but it's fun, dude. I think I told you the other day at the end of it, like I ended the movie and I was like, that was kind of fun. Like it was, it didn't take itself too serious. It had some cool kill scenes in it. There were some dry spots in it, but overall I think it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I felt like some of the dry spots were filled by some witty conversation and dialogue. More so that I picked up on it on the second watching. First watching, I don't think I picked up on the dialogue the same. No, it was a good time. One thing that attracted me to this movie is the director and the way that this movie was made. They couldn't get funding for it. So this group of friends who'd been making a bunch of like VHS and Super 8 movies since the 80s had created a production group called Lab of Madness. And together they, without a budget, just said, fuck it, and made the movie. And over the course of about a year, or about 6 months to a year, they went ahead and just shot the whole thing and made it happen on weekends. And anytime I hear of successes of like people coming together and producing like their passion projects and working through like the adversities of, you know, getting investors and such, like it attracts me just a little bit more than some of the other big budget stuff.
Yeah, I feel you, because, you know, when you have big budget stuff, it's like you've got controlling interest, creative interest, you know, nepotism, things like that. There's not a lot of like the same kind of passion in it, right? I'm thinking as I'm saying all these things out loud, specifically about Sean Heights, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've been texting each other here and there over the last couple of weeks or so, ever since I went out to the desert and helped him with his new project, Bellevue Bob. And I was thinking about him today because, dude, he sent me the poster for that shit. I can't share it. It was an eyes only thing, but it's subtle, but it's so dope, man. It's such a good poster. But like, I was recalling, we were shooting this one scene and we were going to be using a car for the scene, and he wanted to get these kind of weird shots, you know? And I said, hey, Sean, I've got this like a car, like a camera mount for my iPhone, he was shooting on a Red camera, which uses Blackmagic software. And I have the Blackmagic app on my phone. So basically turns my phone into like a Blackmagic camera. So I was like, look, I can set the same settings on my phone to match your settings on your camera, and we can mount this, we can put the phone on the mount, and it's got a real tight suction cup for outside the car, and you get some cool like outside, you know, the car shots. And he was like, that's pretty dope. But I have these shots planned out and blah, blah. And so he was like, he just kind of stopped talking. And then he looked over at me and he's like, I'm a run and gun kind of motherfucker. And I was like, all right, cool, man.
Oh man.
But I don't know that you get that same kind of like creative freedom when you are got, you know, a ton of producers and a studio behind you and like, you know, all kinds of different people saying, well, you know, what if we did this or we can appeal to that and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah. So just the whole concept of Lab of Madness was pretty cool. They'd done a Green Room, which I'm about halfway through and it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay. He directed a couple episodes of True Detective.
Mm-hmm. And you know that's fire.
All right, so Murder Party, as you mentioned, is a story of a group of people who are out to do some murdering, but in the form of a party, right? We open up, I think it's New York City, right? New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be New York. A bunch of art students.
Totally. And we are introduced to our main character, right? So in the very beginning, like, we get some like B-roll shots, just kind of setting the atmosphere in the scene. We get the impression that it's Halloween. We see a bunch of kids kind of running around doing their thing. But it all these like panning shots that lead up to us meeting our main character. And it's done so by this little black envelope that's just kind of like moving, tumbling in the wind, and it lands at the feet of our main character, Christopher.
What's this?
Yeah, Christopher Hawley, played by Chris Sharp. He's just this regular dude on the street, right? Like, button down shirt with a sweater over. Actually, we see him walk into the movie store, right? And what's he doing?
Yeah, he's renting some horror movies.
He's renting some VHS tapes, man. And immediately made me think of VHS Doom. Love you guys.
Of course.
But he rents some horror movies. It's Halloween or Halloween Eve, right? So what else are you going to do? And then he shows up to his house. Now, I will say, I don't know that it's crucial, but they do take their time to point out the fact that he has some like time-based medication.
Yes, yes.
So his alarm goes off.
Go off on his wife.
Yep.
Watch.
And he's like, oop.
Yep.
And then he's in his apartment. Where he has a cat. He's a cat dad. Sir Lancelot, I want to say, was the cat's name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, got it.
Very Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, that was his vibe, right? Especially with his Halloween costume. But
yeah.
So yeah. In the house, he's got this big ass bowl of candy corn, to which Perla was like, who the fuck eats candy corn? I'm like, I eat candy corn.
I don't mind it. There's that love-hate relationship that so many people have with that.
I dig it.
But he does. It's not like one little bag though from the store that he pours into the bowl though, wasn't it?
No.
Wasn't it like two or three that he's like pouring in. Like that was a little hard.
He had like a stupid bowl of candy corn, dude. I was like, is he going to eat it like cereal or he's just going to like pour something in it? But he just starts popping them in just like that.
Yeah.
So he's getting settled. He pops a movie in and he's like, oh yeah, I got this invitation. And he opens it up and he's invited to the murder party.
Yay.
See if I can find what the actual invitation says.
I think it was like real simple. Like you're invited to party or something.
Come to the murder party. Well, the front of it says you're invited, but then when he breaks the seal, it opens it up. And then I don't think it shows much of what it says. He just sees the address in there and he runs it on like Google Maps or MapQuest. I think it was, dude. I was like, what a callback. And then like he's using this MacBook Pro where I'm like, that's like my old MacBook Pro from like 2005. And then I remember this movie's in 2007. So I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
It all makes sense.
It checks. What was the kicker was that he printed the map out. And I was like, who the fuck prints? Oh, yeah, it's 2007. My bad.
Wait. Even back then, who the fuck has ink in their printer?
That's true. Well, I mean,
that's the big issue.
You see this guy. He looks the type, dude. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sweater with the fucking, he's got a cat. He's a small little like one bedroom apartment. The dude has a smashed pumpkin on his doorstep. He picks it up and he makes fucking pumpkin bread with it.
This
guy prints maps, dude.
He's very Ned Flanders-ish. You're right.
My favorite flavor, plain.
Yeah, man. Like, but I mean, so as you're painting the picture, he's a little bit of a loner. He's a little bit on his own. He's just buckling down for the night of loneliness again with his cat and insanely huge thing of candy corn. And you know what?
That's not what I thought you were gonna say. But okay.
You know what?
Fucking tease.
What's up with that? What's up with that invite that I found? Not that I received, right. Not that it was provided to me,
right.
That I found on the ground.
What would be the equivalent of that today? Like finding a USB flash drive maybe and just like plugging it in and seeing what you get?
Who the fuck would do that?
It's a thing.
Okay. I can see that.
So dude decides to go. He goes to get his costume, right? He's got a box. This is Halloween costume. He busts it out. And we see this little like art and crafts scene with him like getting a roll of like twine and some duct tape. And he's like, we're seeing that he's making stuff. And then what it turns out to be is like this like suit of armor made out of cardboard, all put together with the rope and duct tape. And I gotta say, it was pretty dope, dude.
Hell yeah. I looked at that thing and I was like, did he use little like brass brads that you'd pull through and then you'd have to like pull them?
So that you could
pull down your visor. I mean, like he went hard.
The dude's crafty. Now it also made me wonder too. Okay, are you going out of your way to show me how crafty this dude is? Because it's going to come in handy later. But
I didn't. That didn't even cross my mind.
I didn't read too much into it.
You know what crossed my mind when we went to the Halloween party and I was a douchebag.
Yeah, Matt brought that up a while back, I remember, because that was the same Halloween where he was a terrorist.
Correct. And like originally I was supposed to go as a luchador and just like be like shirt off, luchador mask, fuck it, let's do this. But then I had like the stomach flu, I got the BGs all day at work, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to like just pull this off and party at the same time. That's where I went as a douchebag instead. Which well played, really sir. Wasn't a
well
stretch.
Played. Well played. All right. So Chris gets on the train. He sits next to this dope rapper, which I thought that was a funny scene because he's just
rapping in his face.
Yeah, like literally in his face. And he's just like total white guy scared at this black guy rapping at him. But he gets off the train.
On the streets of Brooklyn.
That's true. So he's walking through, he gets out of the subway and he's walking through the neighborhood and, you know, we're getting the idea of where he's at. It's Halloween. It's New York. You know, there was some Clockwork Orange people walking through, like, you know, it was pretty dope, but he's not really finding what he's looking for. So he starts going down like you know, this little back road and then like this sketchy alleyway, and finally ends up at some random door, 290 Shore Street.
I wouldn't go in.
You know, and like he just walks in.
But it looks like I don't know if everybody's seen Fight Club, but like the place where like Tyler Durden lives.
Who hasn't seen Fight Club?
Hey, man. But like the place where Tyler Durden lives in this downtrodden, like industrial part of town, like it just, no, what the fuck are you doing there at this hour? Like, get out of there. Even the trick or treaters ain't hanging out. And you know they're fiends for candy.
All right. So, dude walks in and he just finds like this, like, ragtag group of people just hanging out, chilling, right? And this is for the most part the majority of the cast for the rest of the movie. So we meet them kind of, you know, in quick
introduction,
rapid session here or whatever. So
Paul.
Dude, don't even get me started on Paul right now. Hold on.
The gothic vampire.
Okay, so we meet Macon, who's played by Macon Blair. Macon. Shocker. And Macon is he's like, Paul's the photographer, right?
Yeah.
So Macon is the werewolf.
Correct.
Okay, so I think it'd be easier to identify by costumes here. So Macon is the werewolf, right? And so when Chris walks in, Macon's just like throwing darts, just chilling. He's got like his mask up over his head. And then when he sees Chris walk in, he's oh shit. And he puts his mask on real fast.
You didn't see that.
Yeah, exactly. And then we go around the table, right? So then we meet, we see this guy dressed up as one of the baseball fury from Warriors.
The Warriors.
And that's Bill, played by William Lacey. Again, shocker, using our real names here. We see Paul. He's played by Paul Goldblatt. And I guess you find out later, but he's supposed to be like 19th century vampire. Then we meet
Victorian.
Yeah, exactly. They're resin. They're made out of resin. Then we meet Skye. Well, we don't really meet her, but we see her. Skye, who's a cheerleader, or like a zombie cheerleader, maybe. Played by Skye Saulnier. Oh, shit. Is she married to the director, Jeremy Saulnier?
Uh-oh.
I didn't even notice that. You're usually good at this shit. Did you look it up?
Nah, I'm on it right now, though.
Nope. They're husband and wife. They've been married since September 7, 2002. There you go.
It's one way to keep the budget down. Hey, babe, can you go get me something from the fridge? Seriously. And can you act this out real quick?
Remember how you were running lines with me? Well, guess what?
You got the part.
And then we meet Lexi. And I don't know how to describe Lexi's costume.
She's Briss from Blade Runner.
Is that who she is?
Yes. She's playing the part from Blade Runner.
Got
and like
it.
Once you realize that, then you look at Blade Runner and you're like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good costume.
Yes. Like, yeah. Well, hence my current reaction.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're all surprised at the fact that this dude just walked through the door, right? Because there's some conversation that happens. They're taking a look at his invitation, right? And this is where we start to deduce that, like, they set this whole thing up and didn't think that that invitation would be found by anybody. And even if it did get found by somebody, that anybody would actually show up.
Yeah. They do give that impression, like, oh, shit, someone actually showed.
Now, it's not. Hey. Yeah. And it's not clear, like, the intent of the party or like what's happening right away. They're just surprised. But after some conversation, I think they're starting to Chris is starting to figure out, because he's looking around and he's seeing all the weapons on the floor, right? The tape, yeah, the chainsaw, the sledgehammer, and they're burning the evidence, right? They burn the invitation and
a jar of acid.
Oh, don't even get me started on the acid. It's a murder party. They're all waiting for someone to show up, and they've got all these weapons. So Chris, being the man that he is, realizes he's about to be murdered.
Uh-oh.
Fuck. These people threw a party to murder a total stranger.
I brought bread.
He brought the fucking pumpkin bread. Okay, so they've got him tied up in a chair, right? And, you know, Paul, the fucking 19th century vampire photographer, starting to take pictures of him. Blade Runner is starting to fucking call Alexander, right? So now we're talking about this other guy, Alexander. We get the impression that, like, he's a leader of the group.
Yep.
And while they're, like, figuring out what to do, how they're going to handle the situation, the cheerleader is eating the pumpkin bread.
Oh, this is really good bread.
Right?
Yeah. They look good. Oh.
Are there raisins in this?
They were raisins. Yes, he did put raisins. They were...
Are they organic?
Non-organic raisins.
They're non-organic.
Oh my God, you're allergic. You're not going to die, are you?
And so what happens when you're allergic to preservatives?
I'll be fine. I just get really dizzy. I just need to sit down. I get really dizzy. It's preservatives. I'm allergic to them.
But before she could do that, she fucking passes out.
And when just she takes it right there into the dome.
Dude, she falls over and hits her head on...
Just like, it looked like just some random metal scrap that was like laying around.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something, but it just looked like crap.
And she starts to bleed out. And then they check on her and she's fucking dead, dude.
It's cool though. She sits up and like the blood is just starts squirting because it's one of those like, I don't feel good. I think she says something like,
it smells like cut grass.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
And then, wonk.
Yeah, she had this gnarly just fucking, like, gash on the side of her head, and then she died out. So now I'm thinking, okay, is this what this is going to be? Where the intent was for all of them to murder him, but now through, you know, hilarity and, you know, just circumstance, all these people around him are going to die. Like, is that going to be the movie, you know? So either way, I was still in.
Right.
Because I wanted to see how everybody was going to die. But until we get to that point, everybody's just starting to freak the fuck out now, right? And so while they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, what they're going to say, they ended up rolling up the cheerleader in plastic and then they dumped her in a box because they didn't know how they were going to explain that shit to Alexander, the boss, and they didn't know what to do yet. And he was on his way and they're like, fuck it, let's just hide the body real quick. And as soon as they put her in that box, fucking Alexander's at the door.
Yeah, they're trying to, like, clean up as he's walking in, you know? Like, oh, shit. I thought the box was, like, a freezer or something they were throwing her into. But either way,
I mean, I
she's
think
out
just,
of there.
I think you're just so used to people putting bodies in freezers that you're like...
Why wouldn't you in this scenario?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
But no, it was a box. Just a big box. So, Alexander shows up. Alexander is played by Sandy Barnett. Which, when I looked him up on Instagram, I couldn't find him as Sandy Barnett. I found him as Alexander Barnett. So I was like, is like his middle name Alexander or Sandy's his middle name? I don't know if it's like where the Sandy comes in. Maybe Alexander's part of his real name, but either way.
Sounds like one of those like Italian mafia type names or something. Sandy he goes Barnett? By Pussy. Like, pussy you know.
Hey, Pussy Hands.
Right. Always. Okay.
But he shows up accompanied by somebody else. Do you remember the dude that showed up with him?
Psycho.
Close.
What was it?
And this is Zyko, my new best friend.
Zyko. With a Zyko. Z. With a Z. Zeta. Z. With a Z.
Fucking
Zyko.
And he's I like him.
He's of, here's why I liked him. He's of some like ambiguous Eastern European country, right? Like he's got that accent and they're like, hey, who is this guy?
He works in the back of the pierogi shop.
He
sells drugs.
I think the almost the exact quote by Alexander was like,
"Psycho, he's my drug dealer. He sells out of the back of his parents' pierogi shop. It's all right. He's not gonna hurt you. His gun's fake. It's just part of his costume."
What's his costume?
And a dog. Didn't he also bring his dog?
Yes.
This is Hellhammer. He's part dingo.
Like, because I was like, where the hell did this dog suddenly come from?
He brought a dog named Hellhammer.
Because it ain't your baby.
That's a dope name for a dog.
Hellhammer?
Hellhammer? Hell yeah, dude.
I mean, that's what I named my member.
Anyway, so we learn real quick that Psycho is crazy. He pulls out a gun on one of them, right? I think what happened is everybody lined up. So we get the impression Alexander is the leader of the group. And then they all kind of line up to talk to him. And he's checking out their costumes. And he's looking at Paul.
What are you supposed to be, Paul?
Now, I said I wanted to fucking talk about that, dude. And I'm going to say that even in this movie, I'm still just as mad with this one as all the other Pauls that I've seen in the movies that we've watched so far. Like, why does this guy, I'll call him a little bit of a bitch of the group, right? He's the emotional one, right? The alcoholic. He's a little bit on the chubby side. I'm like, God damn, man. I can't escape my own stereotype.
Paul wasn't the alcoholic. No, Macon, the werewolf, was the alcoholic.
Oh, you're right.
Because they had these like rules in place, right? The rules were no weed and no alcohol. But the pile of cocaine on the table, that's totally okay.
Yeah, totally, totally. Okay, either way, whatever. Paul's there. He's a little bit of a chubster. He's got a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a beard going on. He wasn't too bad, I guess, in hindsight, considering he's not the alcoholic.
And he had the dopest, like, costume of the mix.
He was the 19th century vampire. But
that's right. He looked like a member of like things that they would do in the dark or whatever.
I was thinking Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, I mean that's what he was intending for. But I thought he felt more like
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I gotcha. Well, so now he's going through all their costumes and he's got a problem with Paul's because Alexander also is dressed up as a 19th century vampire. And like I was like, really? Are you? Is that what's happening? Cause he's just wearing like a red, like, you know, like a shirt, like a red button down shirt with some of the open. And then he's got like a suit on, I guess.
And one of those like little like iron crosses.
It reminded me of the one from Demon Knight with that, the thing that had like Jesus' blood in it.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. But he was like, this is a problem because I'm also a 19th century vampire. So take off your costume. And he's like, what?
Nobody shows up like the crow.
So this is where he turns to Psycho. Alexander turns to Psycho and is like, you know, like I think he gave him a nod or something. And he pulled his gun out on him and he made fucking Paul strip down right there. And we get to see that he's wearing a little Speedo. But, so like now that they're all settled and then what we kind of are finding out is like, these guys are like an artistic collection, right?
Yes.
Alexander seems to be like the head. Everybody's kind of like kissing his ass a little bit, like he's like the leader of the group, if you will.
Actually, I don't know if he's the leader. I think what he is he's this like snobby motherfucker who claims to have a whole bunch of money that he wants to give out as a grant for the person who commits like the best murder is going to get this grant of like an unbeknownst amount of money. Everybody's like arguing about how much it really is and shit, and so they're all like really just trying to suck his dick to get this money.
And that, so by extension, we're learning that all of these people, Blade Runner and Werewolf and Photographer and Baseball Fury and Cheerleader, they're all artists in their own way with their own styles, right?
True that.
So yeah, you're right. He's like, whoever does it the most artistic way, like, is going to get this grant money. And so, he starts to ask, like, hey, where's the cheerleader? And they're like, oh, I think she went to this other party, Cicero's party. And he was like, oh, what a bitch or whatever.
It's just 10 blocks away.
Yeah, it was.
I was like, 10 blocks? Jesus Christ. But they're New Yorkers. They're like, ah, that's a commute.
Now, I got to say, the whole time, everyone's kind of up in arms and talking and, you know, talking with Alexander. We're all trying to figure out what's going to happen with Chris, the knight who is tied to the chair. For the most part, Baseball Fury Bill is just on his phone watching YouTube videos. He has zero interest in like engaging with the group, and he actually seems like very fucking off put by everybody. Almost like you get the impression that he's younger than everybody. So he has that, like, it's almost like that, like, I'm just gonna let these fucking guys argue about their shit and I don't give a fuck about them. And but then also I got the impression too that maybe like he thought like he was better than them, which I don't think was the case, but I don't know. Either way, he just seemed very disinterested in like wanting to like hang out with them.
That's a good point you brought up, because I think a lot of the discussion amongst the artists is how good, you know, Baseball Fury is as an artist, and they're all kind of like jealous of him. So you're right. He kind of feels like he's above all this, like it's kind of bullshit, but very disconnected, doesn't really give a fuck. I like his character a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. He was awesome.
So as they're like sitting there talking, they finally devise the plan. They're going to wait till the witching hour, and then they're all going to stab Chris in unison.
Yes.
That's what we're doing. But the witching hour is so long away.
Yeah, I know what the witching hour is. I'm saying I'm going to need some food before then.
You want to order food?
Yeah, I can pick it up incognito.
Also, Macon, I want you to get some cake. We can't.
They get into this big ass argument about what they're going to eat.
I feel like
Chinese. And by the time they can even come to a conclusion, I think they started, I think it was Paul that threw out pizza yesterday.
Yeah.
I was like, you fucking fat ass, dude.
I
think we should rule Asian
out altogether. I mean, it's a party. It's pizza. You got to have pizza.
And then somebody was like, well, then you got to have a cake. Because if it's a party, it's not a party without cake.
That's right.
Pizza and cake. And then it went to like fish and chips, sushi and like Korean and like everybody couldn't agree on anything until they finally came back around to pizza.
There is one thing that I think we missed. Werewolf gets like himself all jacked up because I think he's got like a thing for one of the chicks there. Yeah, for Blade Runner. And so like, he's like, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. I'm fucking going to do it. So he goes ahead and grabs the acid, the bottle of acid, right? And he just goes like rage style, like,
oh, that's right.
He starts pouring all the acid all over Chris, and like, yes, yeah, it's done. And he's like breathing heavy and freaking out, and like, you know, I did it. I fucking did it. I fucking did it, guys. And they're like, he doesn't look messed up.
He's not even right. In pain. His flesh is not melting.
What's going on? And he kind of like spits, you know, like, yeah, what's this in my mouth?
It's acetic acid, right? Or that sounds redundant.
Yes, yeah, but it is. It's like some lesser named acid.
Acid, I think.
Yeah, and freaking Blade Runner looks it up and she goes, that's vinegar.
I think it's vinegar. They just dump vinegar on the dude, and I was like, okay, so that kind of reinforces my suspicion from earlier, which is like these guys, as much as they were supposed to commit a murder tonight, are dum-dums. One girl's already died by raisins, and then they're over here trying to kill this dude with vinegar. So like, I have a feeling everybody around him is going to die. In these stupid, somehow, like, fucking comedic kind of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really setting that stage for sure. And I only remember that because when they're in the argument about food, like, Zyko is all like,
we have fish and chips. I smell vinegar.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's,
which is just another dig back at Werewolf. Like, you fucking idiot.
All right. So by the time they land on pizza and cake, they turn around and notice Chris is gone, dude.
That fool
broke his ties and he's gone. He's not in the chair. So they give chase. They give chase, and I gotta say, like, 99.5% of this movie takes place in just this one warehouse setting, which, again, is, it's awesome because if you're low budget and you are strapped for cash and you're using available resources and you can shoot 95%, you know, 99% of the movie in one room, how do you do that without making it feel stale or boring or elongated? Which, that last part, I will say, it does stretch a little bit, even though it's only an hour and 20 minutes. But I got to say, they got pretty creative with it, right? Because what happens is they give chase, they find him, and then they tie him back up. So then they send Werewolf for pizza and cake.
Catch him, though. Like, they catch him in, like, the most awkward manner. He goes in a room. He's got, like, a bunch of weapons around. He just starts grabbing random shit. And then, like, when he busts out of the room, there's everybody surrounded the room. So he just throws everything and keeps running. Like, I was like, what the fuck has he got in his hand? He had, like duct, like tubing for ducts and shit, like, that you would put up in the ventilation system.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot about that. So that's where, in that moment right there, it tied me back to when he was making his costume. I was like, is this guy going to MacGyver some fucking shit to get his way out of it? Nope. He just fucking dropped it and left.
I thought he was going to walk out and with this, like, upgraded armor. Like, he was going to be all, like, silver now or something. Like, he went from cardboard to aluminum. That didn't happen.
So now that they got him tied back up, they send the Wolfman out for pizza and cake. Everybody's kind of partying, chilling, right? Except for fucking Bill. He's always just there on his phone. Baseball Fury. We see Alexander and Blade Runner getting it on in a shed. Paul is just kind of, you know, taking pictures, doing his thing. And then Wolfman gets back with the food. And so they decide to sit down and play a game because they gotta kill time, right?
He gets back and he sees the two of them having sex. So this is the girl that he wants, right?
Oh, that's right. Like, yeah.
So he starts getting pounded, like, starts pounding the drinks, and, like, he ends up, like, somehow getting covered in alcohol. And, like, I mean, he's just getting hammered. He's like, fuck it. I've lost my bitch. What the fuck am I doing tonight?
That's later. The whole, like, porn and the alcohol thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is later. But yes, we do start to see him getting emotional about the fact that, like, Alexander's banging Blade Runner. So this is where you start to pick up on, if you didn't already pick it up, that he's got a crush on her.
Right.
So now that everybody's together, Alexander's like,
okay, everyone, Zyko brought us a treat.
I call this extreme truth or dare. All the kids are doing it in Belarus.
And I was like,
I like the way that sounds.
How's that work? I'll tell you how it works. Everybody fucking takes a syringe of sodium amytal to the veins.
It's truth serum.
Yeah, which I was like, what's the difference between amytal and pentothal? But I'll ask my my street doctor next time I see him. Anyways, the point is, they're going to
enjoy... Hey, Zyko, what's the difference?
$40.
Word.
Dude, I saw this Instagram video. I don't have it ready, so we won't take a fun break, but I'll just tell you. This girl walks up to her dad, and she's like, how much is 1/8? And he's like, $40. And she's like, what? I'm doing fractions. He's like, oh, shit, my bad. You know, but he starts laughing. And you hear the wife in the background, I'll give it to you for 30. And so good. Okay, so they all inject truth serum, and they're going to play a game of fucking truth or dare.
Don't be such a dildo, Paul.
And it was funny because when...
Except Alexander.
Yes. If you're watching carefully, you'll notice that Alexander's the only one who doesn't give himself a dose. And Bill took the syringe and put it between his fingers, like...
Like he knew what was
up. I was like, that's a pro move right there, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen Requiem for a Dream. So they start asking each other.
I lived in Pomona.
Yeah, I know, right? So they start asking themselves some questions, you know, here and there or whatever. And, you know, they're a little honest with each other. And it's, this is probably the driest part of the movie for me. And like, it's meant to be slow. They're slowed down in their reactions a little bit. They're all on drugs. It's supposed to be, you know, character development. You know, we get the, especially with Alexander, right? Because here he is advertising that he's got money. He's kind of positions himself as the leader, but then he allows everybody else to do all this stuff except for him. So you kind of see that he puts himself above the rest of the group. But it went on for a while.
And yeah, like I think I said, the purpose of the scene was really to establish who the people really are. Like, just so you really know, like, the true love between the two of them and how, like, they had the whole story about the popsicle and the water tower. He still had the popsicle stick that he loved from fucking Blade Runner and shit in his pocket all these years later after high school. Like, total creeper, man.
Stalker shit.
Total creeper. And then, like, I think that's when Alexander then...
If we're going to do this, I'm going to need some crank.
Well, we also learn a little bit about Chris as well, because they gave it to Chris.
Oh, yeah.
They're like,
what do you do?
I work for the NYPD.
You're a fucking cop?
Did you frisk him?
No goddamn way he's a cop.
You guys cuss too much, but it's okay. And no, I work for the Parking Enforcement District. It's a civilian branch of the NYPD. I'm a level one TEA. I make $26,500 a year, and all I do is write tickets and ruin people's days.
It just kind of dies, you know, fizzles out from there. And I think Alexander gets that. Alexander's in that mode right now where, like, if you've ever been the designated driver for a group of drunk ass people, and you're just like, fuck, dude, when is this night going to be over? Like, we got to go to another bar. Like, fuck. That's kind of where he's at. So he's like, yeah, let's get some crank going, you know? So he sends Zyko out for crank, dude.
It's 2007, man. It's 2007. That's all I can say. Fucking, what's his name in the movie was a big deal at the time. What is the star? Shit.
Oh, Jason Statham?
Yeah. It was a big deal, man. That was 2006. So, yeah.
So now they're all fucking partying hardy in this warehouse. And this is where Werewolf is like just getting hammered drunk, dude. And he's brown bagging it, and like he's watching Blade Runner and Alexander dancing with each other, and he's just seeing those two come closer and closer. So he's just drinking his sorrows away, dude. And this is where he's like, he's literally showering in alcohol. I thought it was beer, but you know, I guess it may have been like, you know, actual alcohol or whatever. But they're all getting fucked up.
Doesn't fucking Alexander then hook up with one of the dudes? Like, I mean, they're partying. Like,
hook up with one like, of the dudes?
So yeah, in one scene, fucking Alexander's fucking Blade Runner. And then in another scene, I think he's fucking Paul in the back office.
Was it Paul?
Like, it was one of the other guys.
I think he admitted as part of the extreme truth or dare that he was gay. So,
hey, so a lot yeah, of things so come out, with,
or at least that he was bi, something like that. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So they're all partying and they're walking around, kind of just hanging out, and they notice that Bill's just like sitting there painting, right? And they start looking at his painting, and they're like, "Fuck, it's pretty good, dude.
It's really good."
And they're doing that thing that I think is common amongst every kind of group, where like one looks at another, and like, you know, they're as artists are looking at this guy, and they're already kind of know that he's good, and they're looking at his art and they're like, fuck, it's really good, man. Like, fuck this guy, you know, like, how dare he be so good. So they ask,
will you do me a favor and go check on Hellhammer? I wouldn't want any stray bitches to answer his call.
While he goes outside to check on the dog, it's Alexander, Blade Runner, and Paul all like looking at his painting and really just kind of talking about how like they need to kill him. Like,
yeah,
I think he's so good that
he's making us look bad.
Yeah, 100%.
And there's this grant money that's at risk. So like, fuck this. Take out the competition. Get that grant money.
But little do they know that he was standing there listening to what they were saying. Right. And it kind of like scared them a little bit. So they walked away. He goes back to painting. And then this is where Zyko comes back with the crank, right?
Just throws a big ass bag right there on the fucking table. Like, I mean, a big ass bag.
It's like
a softball.
It's like what a 14-year-old might imagine a big bag of like cocaine to look like. Like if you told a 14-year-old, like, show me what a big bag of coke looks like. That's the bag of crank that this guy brought back, dude. It's just like,
it's like a sandwich baggie tied off. Like,
yeah, 100%. Well, while he's getting settled with the crank, we got a new girl that shows up.
Hey, baby.
She's a photographer's assistant for Paul. And so I think at this point, it's good to note, to make note of, like, Paul wants to do like this, like, photography expose on killing Chris. Blade Runner wanted to do like a video thing, and then Bill's just kind of doing his own thing.
And I don't, Bill was like, Bill came with it. He's like,
we're going to cut this guy in half. We're going to dump his body in a vacant lot. We're going to use the press clippings as part of the papier-mâché elements of a massive multimedia metastructure with participational,
he had all these like ideas, and then he's like,
no, you know what? Let me start over. Maybe something a little more progressive. We'll staple a pancake to his face and push him in front of the G train, and no one will ever know. So
yeah, no, both those things are true, right? But that was in that scene where, like, when Alexander first showed up, and like,
oh, you're right,
they're all trying to like flex their artiste and they're trying to come up with ways to kill him, and like, they're like, what? Bill was like,
I don't know, it's gonna cut his dick off and set him on fire.
I mean, I don't get it, but I get it,
but okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, okay, so this girl shows up and she starts taking pictures of Chris tied up, gagged up, and he's like trying to tell her, like, dude, get out of here, get out of here. And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. It happens with all these shoots. And I was like, okay, it's not her first rodeo either, you know? But again, we get back into a conversation about how we're going to kill this dude. And Alexander had even noted to Paul that,
Paul, your photographs are Excelsior. You're the front runner for the grand.
But still, you know, it's open. And at the same time, we hear the dog barking again. So they tell Werewolf dude to go check on Hellhammer. Now, you got to remember, this dude's passed out drunk. He's been like showering in alcohol because he's trying to drown his sorrows about Blade Runner being, you know, fucked by Alexander. And he goes outside and he tries to light a cigarette. And what happens?
Woo! If that cat had 9 lives, he just spat them all.
He goes up so fast, dude. It was hilarious how fast that shit lit up. And so while they're trying to figure out where he is, nobody knows that he's outside fucking melting to death. The photographer's assistant, the female, the new chick, and Blade Runner go out to check on him, see that he's fucking melting. So they grab the fire extinguisher and they come to put him out. And at the same time, Chris ends up breaking out of his, at the same time, Hellhammer. Okay, so the girls brought the dog in from outside and then put out the fire. And then Chris used the dog's chain as a way to like help get himself out of the chair, which got him out of the chair. Man, if you didn't know, I got vodka and lemonade in this thing and it's kicking in a little bit.
Good man, good man.
The dog runs over to the box where they hid the cheerleader. And he starts to bark, right? They're starting to figure out that something's happening with that box. At the same time, what they're not noticing is that Chris is like trying to break himself out. So when Alexander opens the box and finds the cheerleader, it's a big kind of reveal to him. But I don't think he cared all that much, right?
Yeah, it was weird. It was like everybody was more worried about his reaction because I think he had hooked up with her and that's why, or whatever. But since then, he's already hooked up with 2 other people. So fuck it. Like,
yeah, true.
Move on.
So I think Alexander's weirded out by this whole thing because he's figuring out that like they're hiding shit from him, right? And then they have this like moment of clarity where they all start like, everyone's putting their cards on the table. And they start, Paul starts talking a lot of shit to Alexander. Like, you're a fucking fraud. Why do you have a New Jersey area code? Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think what they, what Paul ended up doing was injecting Alexander with some of that truth serum.
Yeah,
and
then
they put him up against the wall and they started asking him questions.
You're full of shit.
I'm a fry cook.
See, what did I tell you?
I let you fuck me.
Jejun. Jejun? What, do you write stuff down to say to us later?
Yeah.
That's pathetic. I don't understand. So there's no grant, there's no gallery?
Where are my photographs?
They're at my grandmother's house in New Jersey.
I'm gonna go now.
Yeah. Wait, no, hang on a second.
So what are you doing with our art?
Well, I'm gonna kill you all, and then I'm gonna sell it. Art isn't worth anything until you're dead.
Alexander, I hate you. Is that even your real name?
No, it's Tim.
So it's at this moment, we are an hour in, 56 minutes in, where chaos ensues. Now it's every man for them fucking selves, right? So it's like, okay, he was gonna kill us, we're gonna kill this guy, one girl's already died, now let's fucking go. Even the dog got in on it by eating the bag of crank that was just kind of left out on the table. So they all start going at each other. Bats, sledgehammers, axes, everyone's going at it. Fucking Alexander tries to get away, but the dog fucking runs after him all cranked out. And you don't see it happen, but you hear the dog attacking Alexander. And then the dog comes right back out. And Alexander's face is all fucking chewed up. You got the werewolf guy who came back in, and like his skin on his like head had like slid off. So it's all just like,
yeah, he takes off the mask. It was nice.
Eyeball type shit. It was fucking gross and awesome at the same time. And then again, everyone's just killing each other. So we see, actually what happens is Baseball Fury picks up the axe and he starts murdering everybody. So Bill's just fucking going at it. And I think he just starts yelling at one point, everybody dies, everybody dies. And he's just like fucking hacking away at everybody, dude. It was so good. But at the same time, Chris fucking broke out and got away. He makes his way out of the building.
The conveyor belt. There's like a chase where he's going up a conveyor belt. I love that shit.
And the werewolf dude is still chasing him with no fucking like flesh on his dome. So I was like, that's awesome that we get to see him for a little bit longer. But Baseball Fury ends up catching up to him, kills him, and then ends up chasing after Chris. And they start hopping fucking rooftops like they're goddamn Ninja Turtles. You know what I mean? Just like jumping from one to the other.
Like, and I imagine all New Yorkers do.
Yeah, right?
That's what you guys do.
It's just a thing, dude.
Yeah.
Well, Chris ends up landing at some other fucking party, and when he makes his way through the crowd, he's trying to get people to help him. Actually, you know what? No, werewolf dude is still alive because he's chasing him with the fucking chainsaw, but it's an electric chainsaw, so he's also got like an extension cord in his hands, too.
It's funny because it's not the first time that it's come unplugged and into play.
True. Yeah, true. So Chris ends up finding himself in this like swanky loft where there's this other Halloween party going on.
It's Cicero's party.
Well, we don't know that right away, but we just see like Chris just ends up in this room with like these other people that are like posed in different ways. He doesn't really know what's going on. But then there's this Asian dude that's on the mic, like coordinating everything. And when Baseball Fury runs in there, he's like, oh, hey. Bill? Cicero. And Cicero turns around and is like, oh, hey, what's up, Bill? So this is the guy they were talking about earlier when they had claimed that the cheerleader went to Cicero's party.
Oh. Yep. Cool
party. Really?
So Cicero's like, can I get you a drink? And he's like, nah, it's cool. He's like, I'm going to just check out your exhibit. And he goes in there and just fucking plain as day, there's Chris sitting in this fucking little collective with all these other people sitting around, right? And I thought it was so funny because there was this picture frame up on the wall. And it's, again, it's just these people, like, it's art that I don't get, right? It's that whole New York vibe art that I don't get. There's a picture frame on the wall and it has just the word art question mark. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, me too, bro. Cause I don't know either.
Yeah. It's like a unique art exhibit where there's like living pictures, it feels like, or living exhibits where people are like sitting around like to be part of the exhibit. And that, I think that creates some of the allowance to let some of the people into the party, is they're like, oh, you're part of the performers. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's Halloween night. It's an art exhibit. Everyone's dressed up. Nobody knows what's happening. So it's like, it's easy to just be like, yeah, come on in, no problem.
Right.
So Bill's in there and he's still got his axe.
Fuck this whole scene. Everybody dies.
And he fucking starts killing everybody. And again, everybody dies. Everybody dies. And so he kills every fucking person in the room except for Chris. And I gotta say, at this point, the only two people that are still alive are Bill and the werewolf, right? So my earlier assumption where everybody around Chris was gonna die still kind of holds true. So yeah. Now that they're kind of confronted in this room with each other, it's like this tension that's building, and all of a sudden you see the werewolf just fall from the top of the building down, like all the way down, and you just see the fucking extension cord just kind of hanging there. So we're assuming werewolf dude is dead.
Right.
But because Chris is standing so close to the window, he grabs the extension cord and pulls it in, and there's the chainsaw. So as Bill comes to get him, what happens? Do you remember? Because it was pretty fucking dope.
Yeah, he brought the chainsaw down on Bill's head, man. Like,
not even on his head, but like in his face. Like, it's yes. All up on, like, in his like ocular and everything, dude.
Yes, and then he
all in there.
Hell yeah. And then he grabs a pumpkin and like slams it on his head.
I did think that was a little funny. Yes, I was like, okay, are you just like, are you trying to cover up what you just did, or like, what are you doing?
A little bit.
Yeah.
No one's going to see that. Nothing to see.
So he leaves, and then like a group of people, art critics, I guess, come to the door and they see all these bodies on the floor. Oh my right?
God. This is great. They did a really good job.
It's a fucking bloodbath, yes. Dude. It looks like a Dexter kill scene, right? Like,
man, it's just... they really captured the feel of this kill. Like,
everybody just murdered to death on the floor. The fucking walls and ceiling are painted red. And the dude sitting there with a pumpkin on his head. And they're like, I like it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Which, can you blame them? It's Halloween. It's an art exhibit. Hard to tell. Like, yeah, it is hard to tell. Well, Chris leaves. He's like, fuck that. I'm done with this shit. And he walks back home. And again, he's still wearing his full cardboard suit of armor that's just full of blood. He's yeah. Just doused. It's like that scene splattered. From Carrie. It's just blood everywhere, dude.
Oh, yeah.
And he makes it back to his apartment and he sits down with his bowl of cereal.
Cat was sitting in his spot again, Lancelot.
He did pull his bowl of candy corn, which he left out with a note that said, please take one or some or something.
There's like some left. It was weird. I was like, would you want to eat that people, after all the kids had their hands in there all night?
People took it.
I mean, yeah.
And then candy. He sits in his lounger, points the remote right at us, turns on his movie, roll credits.
Yeah, it was fun.
I got to say, I had to watch it in increments, right? Like here and there. Because it was on Plex. I don't think there was anywhere else to watch it. So I didn't really have time to like sit down and watch it as a whole, which I don't like to do. I used to give Matt a bunch of shit for it too. Cause he's like, oh, you know, I watched 20 minutes here and 30 minutes there. I'm like, how do you get into a movie when you watch it in parts like that? Which yeah. I felt in some way with this movie. Like I didn't give it the attention it deserved, but at the end of the day, I still really enjoyed it. And I think it's because of the last 20 minutes. Those last 20 minutes is when you get all the violence, all the gore, all the kill scenes. And the first hour leading up to it, I think, is good character slash story development. There was a pocket of dryness there, but you end on a high note. And I thought, okay, you brought me back around. It was pretty good.
I enjoyed it. I stayed laughing the whole time. So for me, I watched it in one full watch. There's the gore. There's like the imagery, the practical effects. Everything's here. And like with no budget. I fucking love that.
Do we know if there was like any money?
They said zero. Zero budget.
That's dope.
Like they couldn't find any funding, so they just fucking did it themselves. And they're all people that know have known each other and been doing that shit for, you know, years, since the 80s. We all went to different film schools and stayed in touch and then came together and just knocked it out, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I dug it. It was fun for sure. And then going back through it here and now, just as fun. It seemed like everybody had a good time on the set.
I had such a good time watching it. I can only imagine that they did too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They were saying it was cold as shit in there though. Like they had to deal with a lot of temperature swings through the filming and stuff. So
I wonder if they actually shot it like in October around Halloween.
August to February, I think.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
I mean, I'm not familiar with New York weather, but I could imagine going from like hot to cold, you know. Plus, if there's no budget, that means you're not insulating properly, you know, whatever.
True that. True that.
All right, man.
It's been good pick.
Yeah.
Anything else on the agenda?
No, just the usual stuff. Dirty Joe invited me out to a movie premiere tomorrow, Sunday the 4th. But I don't think I'm going to be able to make that. And then, yeah, I don't have any conventions planned this year or anything. I don't know. Just kind of playing it low key, still recovering nice. from the crash. So, just keeping it low pro. Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, good stuff. Dude. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just editing over here.
All right. Well, then we'll see you on the next one. Make sure to follow us, Instagram at Mutant City Horror. Oh, wait, hold on. There you go. Follow us Instagram at Mutant City Horror. You can email the show mutantcityhorror@gmail.com or me directly at paul@mutantcityhorror.com. And then, yeah, I don't know. That's it. I guess we'll just see you on the next one.
You know it.
All right, dude. Talk to you later. Bye. Peace out.
Woo.
Pussy screamed at me.
It what?